Commitments. Everyone say commitment. Now, we traditionally call these things, from Exodus chapter 20, the 10 laws God gave Moses, we traditionally call them the 10 commandments, but as we've been studying, commandments is... It's an okay name because God does say, I want you to do this. But really, these are more like commitments. They are a covenant between God and His people. So there's commitment on both sides. And this is so crucial, and we've been drilling down on this for the last 4 weeks of this series. The Lord gave the Ten Commandments to a people that He had just rescued out of slavery. Everyone say rescued. See, the nation of Israel had no history but being slaves. They had been slaves for nearly 5 centuries. They'd gone into Egypt as a family, grew into a nation. They had always been slaves. They'd never remembered a time when they had been free. Just like some of us, we came from slavery. Now, if you'd have looked at us before we knew God, you would have thought we had it all together. Some of us had money, probably not many of us. Some of us had, great jobs, nice homes. Some of us had nice cars and all the trappings and possessions of North American life in the 21st century. We were doing fine according to everything out there, but we weren't free. And you know what? People will do incredible things to gain freedom. Read your newspaper all around the world. Countries, people are fighting for freedom. Whatever fashion they think, it's freedom. They want to be free. They want to make their own choices. And the problem with sin is that sin sells you this lie that you're free if you do this. And the longer you do it, the more bound you become. Sin tells you if you only do this, you're calling the shots. You're making the decision. You're master of your own ship and your own fate and your own life. And sin sells you that bill of goods. And you go and you do what everybody else is doing and what everybody else says is fun. And you wake up a few months later or a few years later and you're not free. You're bound. That's sin. Israel had been bound. Now, here's the catch. And the devil sells us this bill of goods. He says, you know, you're out here, you don't have any laws, you can do what you want. And the devil sells us that lie all the time, because here's the truth. That people in slavery, they don't need laws, they don't need rules, they're slaves. The devil just dangles something in front of people and they go after it. So they think, I'm free because I don't have any laws. You make rules and laws for things and for people you value. You make rules for your kids. You make rules for your home. Some of you even make rules for your pet. You won't even let your pet go out somewhere at a certain time of the day because you value that. Now, God values His people. And so it's not people enslaved that have rules. It's people that are free that get the privilege of having rules and laws to live by. People say all the time, well, I'm free. I don't go to church. I don't have to keep all those rules. I don't have to do what the Bible says. I'm free. You're not free. The devil dangles one little image in front of you. And you spend hours and hours and hours and hours and hours surfing your computer looking at stuff that just poisons your mind. One little image. You're not free. The devil takes you to one party and you try one substance for one night because that's freedom, right? And you wake up 6 months or 2 years or 10 years later and you're a drug addict or an alcoholic. You're not free. You're bound. The devil dangles one little relationship in front of you that you think you'll just about die if you can't have a relationship with that person. And you end up doing all kinds of things to just have that unattainable relationship. And you wake up a long time later and you find out that wasn't what you needed for fulfillment because you're still empty. You're not free. You're bound. I'll tell you who's free. The people whose God is the Lord. They're free. None of us are here this morning. You look around. We're church people. We admit it. We dress up for Sunday and all that stuff. Still trying to figure that all out. I still haven't figured out neckties except for Judas and Haman in the Bible. Dress up, come to church. It's a neat thing to come to a church like this. Because none of us are here because we were made to feel guilty enough that we had to be here this morning. Nobody's here because they're under some pressing load of guilt. If I don't go to church, we're here because we're free. We made the choice to be here this morning because we want to be in what's happening here. We want to be part of a church body that's doing stuff around the world with missions, and where the music team gets up to sing and the presence of God just goes into an auditorium. We want to be free like that. Ten Commandments were not given to see if Israel could establish a relationship with God. They already had a relationship with God. They'd been set free from Egypt. God gave these principles to His people because they were already free. Commandment number one, just to rehearse, we've only done four, and I know some of you perfectionists, you're trying to figure out like how in the world we're going to get finished in the last part today. Well, we are. Commandment number one says, you can't have any other gods. Thou shalt not have any other gods before me. And what God's really saying in that commandment is, don't go to multiple gods for multiple needs, but make me the center of your life. Come to me for all of your needs. So the first commandment deals with who's on the throne of your life. Who's really calling the shots? That's commandment number one. Commandment number two says, don't make any graven image and worship it. Or don't form anything with your hands that replaces me. And we've talked about this over and over the last few weeks. Don't make God, don't make a little idol, don't make a little statue, whatever. That's part of it. But there's a much bigger part. Don't make God some little idea, some little concept. Don't limit God and say, okay, there's my God. My God is at 71 Downing Street on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock. That's where I interact with my God. And if somebody met you on Wednesday morning at 11 o'clock or Thursday night at 6 o'clock, they wouldn't have any idea that God was your God. You've made God a little location. You've made Him a convenient package. You've made Him a little component of your life, and God doesn't want that. He said, don't make me into a little image. Don't make me into a little box. Don't size me down. Don't make me a convenient value pack size. I'm your God. I want to be everything for you. That's commandment number two. Commandment number three says, don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain, or don't misuse my name. And what that commandment is talking about is, don't use the name of God to accomplish something that God has nothing to do with. People do that all the time. People form religions in the name of God. The Pharisees did it in ancient times, and people do it in modern times. They use the name of God to promote something that God has nothing to do with. I'll tell you how you know what God wants. You read this book. That's His book. And it doesn't really matter what you think or I think or anybody else thinks. It matters what God thinks. Don't misuse my name. And commandment number four, we talked about last time we were together in this series a couple of weeks ago. God said, remember the Sabbath day. Everyone say Sabbath, to keep it holy. So, and there's a good principle there. And we could all learn from that principle and do that principle. And that's take a day off every 7 days. That's a good principle. Awesome principle. But that is not primarily what God was talking about here, was the time factor. He was talking about the provision factor. God was saying, I want you to work for 6 days, and then I want you to take a segment of your life, and I want you to set it aside unto me. And on the seventh day, you set that aside. You go to worship. You don't go to work. You go to worship on the seventh day. And you set that day aside. And here's what God promised. I'll give you 7 days of provision in 6 days if you'll put me first. And God asked that of us in a lot of areas in our lives. God asked that of His people in the area of finances. You give me the tithe of your income, of your increase. And when you give me that, I'll make 90% go as far or further than 100% used to go. And many of you in this building, you know exactly what God was talking about because you've proven Him on that. In fact, the only commandment in the Bible that says, God gives us lots of commandments where He says, I'm going to put you to the test. I'm going to prove you. I'm going to see if you'll obey. But there's only one place where God says, you put me to the test. It's in the book of Malachi when God's talking about giving Him the tithe or the 10% of our increase. God said, you prove me. You try it. And you see if I won't open up the windows of heaven and I'll pour out on you a blessing you can't even contain. So the principle of the Sabbath and the principle of the tithe and many other principles in the Word of God are the very same. They are principles of, will you trust God for your provision? Will you trust God to give you in 6 days what you used to take you 7? Will you trust God to do with 90% what it used to take 100% to do? That's the principle. And so those four principles are the first four commandments. But can I, one more time, just kind of twist your mindset around? Those are not really commandments as much as they are commitments. Because those four commands, those four commitments really answer this question. Who is going to be the center of your life? Who's going to be the focus of your life? Who calls the shots in your life? And if you get, and the Lord just spoke to us through the gifts of the Spirit and basically told us the same thing. If you get those four right, if you get God put first, if you honor God in His proper place, then and only then will it become easy to keep the thou shalt not commandments. There's all kinds of people gritting their teeth trying to keep the thou shalt not commandments. Thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not covet. And they're trying to keep the thou shalt nots, but they haven't done the first four. They haven't got God in His rightful place. Because until you say that God knows better for me than I know for me, God has a better plan for my life than I could come up with, until you've settled that question, you're not ready for the thou shalt nots. You'll mess them up every time. Because you'll make an excuse, you'll find a loophole, you will excuse the most unbiblical behavior in your life, and you will feel justified because you don't have the first four down. You've never chosen who's going to be front and center. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. You've never chosen to let God be in all of your life, not just Sunday morning or Wednesday night. Don't make a graven image. Don't localize me. Don't box me in, God said. You've never really settled the issue of, you know, don't misuse my name. You've got your own little religion going. Oh yeah, you've got Jesus. He's part of it. But you use His name to really do whatever you want. Instead of letting God make you in His image, you've made God in your image. And your God looks a whole lot and thinks a whole lot like you do. Your God really, you know, you've got this buddy God up in the sky, and He really kind of lets you off with murder half the time. Because He thinks exactly like you do. He has all of your same opinions, and there's some sins that He thinks are really bad. Those are typically the sins that other people are doing. And there's some sins that He really doesn't think are a big deal, and those are typically the sins that you are doing. You've got this nice little God. You're misusing the name of the Lord. You're taking His name in vain. You're applying His name to your little religion. You've got this little act going. You haven't made the big decision yet to put God in the front place, in the center place, in the central focal place of your life. You haven't got to commandment number four, where you trust God with all the things that you've got. You're still holding on to an awful lot of things really, really tightly. And in fact, you get nervous. Your blood pressure went up about 10 points in the last 10 minutes when Pastor said the word tithe. Some of you broke out in a sweat. Because you haven't put God first. You haven't really made that decision that He's going to be Lord of everything. The first four commandments, everyone say the first four. The first four commandments tell me how to think about God. In other words, my life has to revolve around Him. And then the last six, everyone say the last six, they tell me how to treat others. And that's what the Lord spoke to us a few minutes ago. If you get God in His right place, then you'll be able to treat others properly. And under the law, commandment number 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, under the law that God gave to the Jews, it was absolutely radical at the time, because what it did is it placed every human being on the same level before God. Up until this point in human culture, that didn't work. That never happened. Every nation around Israel had a king or a ruler, a monarch, some tyrant in control, and they made the rules. And it still happens in lots of countries today, where you've got some committee, some group, some tyrant in power, and they make the rules, and everybody else has to live by their rules. But guess who can break the rules whenever they want? The leaders. And that makes sense, because it's their rules anyway. So if they want to circumvent their own rules for their own reasons, they feel totally at liberty to do that. And in Bible times, that's what happened in every nation. There was a king, and the king made the rules, and you live by the rules or you could die. But the king didn't have to live by the rules. He was the king. If, you know, he said that you couldn't take his property, but if he wanted to take your property, he could come in and do it. It happened all the time. You couldn't do anything to take anything from the king, but the king could come in. He could take your children for slaves in his fields. He could take your property to add to his vineyards. He could take anything he wanted because he was the king and he had made the law. But in Israel, God gave them something radical. He said, we are going to have a new system. This is my system for humanity. There's no one person who makes the rules. There's no one group who makes the rules. Every human being is valuable and every human being is on the same level before the law of God. If you're the king, you're on the same level as the pauper. If you're the ruler, you're on the same level as the peasant. Everyone's on the same level. That was radical in that time. No other nation was like that. But in Israel, everyone had value. And everyone played by the same rules. And everyone was subject to the same laws. And there was no other nation in the ancient world like Israel. The Ten Commandments had to be divinely inspired. You know how I know that? Because there's no commandment in there that says, thou shalt obey Moses. Because if Moses had been writing the Ten Commandments, you can be sure that would have been in there somewhere. Because human beings like to do that. They like to set up these little power structures and so they can control everything under them. They can control everything in their life. And if Moses had been writing the Ten Commandments, there would have been a P.S. after number 10 saying, thou shalt obey Moses. And I bet Moses and God had some serious talks about that once they got a little further on and Israel started backsliding and rebelling. Don't you think Moses said, God, see, I told you, if you'd have just put in number 11, thou shalt obey Moses, we wouldn't be in this mess. That's how I know the Ten Commandments, they didn't come from a man because they put every man on the same level. That system of law was so unusual to the ancient world. Listen. And it made Israel feel so out of place that finally they asked God if they could have a king like everybody else. Imagine that. God had given them the only system of law in the ancient world that put everybody on the same level. Everybody had an equal chance. Everybody was equal before God. God made them the only nation in the ancient world like that. And it felt so different and so awkward and so weird to them that finally they got a little petition together and they said to the prophet Samuel, we want to have a king, what? Like all the other nations. It's in 1 Samuel 8, verse 4. The elders gathered themselves together, came to Samuel unto Ramah and said, behold, thou art old, thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. And the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto the Lord, and the Lord said unto Samuel, listen, hearken unto the voice of the people in all that they say unto thee. He said, go ahead, give them a king. Why? Listen. For they have not rejected you, Samuel, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. God had set them up a system where He reigns supreme over them. God wanted Israel to be a witness to every other nation around them that God is our king. We don't have a physical king. We don't have an earthly king that makes the rules and takes all the gold. We have a heavenly king. And once they had an earthly king, Israel learned the lesson that every nation on the planet has learned that has ever had a monarch. Might makes right. If you've got the power, you can make the rules. And their king could do whatever he wanted to do, and they could do nothing about it. He could do whenever, whatever, to whoever he wanted. From the moment that Israel rejected a theocracy, theocracy means God rule. So a theocracy was what God wanted. He wanted to rule over the nation directly. And just speak to them through his prophets. No king, no ruler, no committees. He just wanted to rule over them. That's a theocracy. And from the time they rejected that theocracy and became a monarchy, well, a monarchy, you know what that is? That's ruled by a king. The idea that everyone was equal before God's law was non-existent in human society until 1776, United States of America. And they formed a democracy. And democracy is different than a monarchy. Democracy is basically ruled by all of the people. But a democracy is still not a theocracy. Because the Bible says, thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil. And democracies, as we have seen in modern times, democracies can make insane decisions because of the rule of the majority. And so we watch nations just go, slide into immorality. They slide into practices and moral laws that create social problems. And then we tax the people more so we can pay for all the problems made by the social ills that they created by breaking the laws of God. So a democracy is a great thing compared to a monarchy. But it's still not a theocracy. We still haven't got back to God's original intent. God knew, and what we know instinctively, listen, if I'm the one making the laws, I can break my own laws. That's the problem with a lot of Christian people, so-called, is that really they've read the Bible, they've come up with their little interpretation of the Bible, and they've kind of made their own little system of laws. Well, God's not too offended by that one. God's not too upset by that little sin, and God's not too upset by this. So they've made their own little system of laws. And the problem with you making the laws is if you make the law, you feel entitled to break the law whenever the need suits you, whenever you really want to. And that's the problem. I feel empowered to disobey any law that I make. I had no problem when our kids were smaller, and I had no problem saying, you know, you're to be in by a certain time. No problem at all. I didn't keep that rule. When I wanted to be out later than whatever time it was that was set, I made the law. I'm the dad. I'm the parent. You break the law. When our kids were real little, you make the law like, don't go on the street. How many ever passed a law like that in your house? Don't play on the street. What's wrong with you people? How many of you parents ever passed a law like that? What do you do? Say your kids go play in the traffic? Don't go on the street. Did you keep that law? You didn't keep the law, don't go on the street. When dad isn't with you, don't go on the street. That's a law you feel empowered to pass because you're the parent, but you broke that law all the time. You went on the street when your kids weren't with you. You didn't keep the law because you made the law. And any law that you make, you feel empowered to circumvent that law because you made it. You realize that there's all kinds of circumstances, and the law is given so you can keep somebody else in line. The law is given so you can keep to a certain standard of morality or conduct or whatever. So in your secret place, in your heart of hearts, you feel empowered to break any law that you make. And that's what was so different about Israel, is that there was actually a divine lawgiver, and God gave principles. And if I am placed with everybody else on the same tier, on the same level under God's law, then I don't have the power to change that law. I either live it or I disobey it. I can't get around it. Any place in history where you see a country with shocking human rights abuses, you will typically see a country where they have no sense of divine law. They know that their laws came through a ruler. They know that their laws came through some religious leader. They know that there's no sense of divine law. So they can abuse anybody that they don't like. They can. That's why we have genocide still in modern times. One of the critical issues in Canadian law, one of the critical issues in the U.S. Before the government and before the Supreme Court is this, and you'll see this question in our media, how much power should the Supreme Court of Canada or the U.S., how much power should they have to make laws? Should they have the power to interpret our law and make our law? And what can they do, and how far can they go, and when should the government intervene? We've had all those discussions over the last few years in Canada over some very serious moral issues that will affect our kids and grandkids for generations to come. And behind that question, how much power should the Supreme Court have, is this question. Is there really a law from God or not? Because if there's really not a law from God, you can do whatever you want. If there's really not a law from God that matters in eternity, then you can basically come up with your little brand of Pentecostalism and you can live it however you want. Well, I like the worship, but I don't like the preaching. I like the singing, but I don't like when they talk about tithing. I like this, but I don't like the commands. I like this, but I don't like that part. And you can start ripping pages out of the Bible to suit yourself, and you come up with your own religion because you don't think there's any source of divine law. But the plain fact of the matter is, God gave us His laws because He knows how this human mind, human body, human life, human emotions, and human spirit, He knows how they work. And so He gives us His law. The value of the Ten Commandments, folks, is not so much the laws themselves. Thou shalt not do this and this and this. It's not so much that. The value of the Ten Commandments is that there is a supreme lawgiver to whom we are accountable. Come on back to the music. At this point in the Ten Commandments, right here after commandment number 4, God gives us 4 commands that set up our relationship with Him. And then right there, He changes gears. And He changes from honor me, everyone say, honor me, to honor others. Everyone say, honor others. And he starts in the most unusual place. He says, I want to start here. I want you to honor your parents. Exodus 20, verse 12. Honor thy father and thy mother. Why? That thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. You honor your parents, and your days will be long. I'll let you stay in the land I'm giving you a long time. Basically, what God was saying to Israel is, I put you in the land. I can take you out of the land. Did your mother ever say that to you? I brought you into this world. I can take you out. Well, she got it from God. Honor your parents. You know why? Because God knew there would be a tendency once Israel got in the land and got familiar. God knew there would be a tendency. Once we got saved, we got free. Sin's gone. Know how to worship. Lift our hands. Speak in tongues. Enjoy the singing and the music and the presence of God. God knew there would always be a tendency once we got in to stray from what had been passed down to us. And so God said, after you get done honoring me, I want you to start honoring others. And the place that you need to start is honor your heritage. Honor your parents. And then honor everybody else. Exodus 20, verse 13, thou shalt not kill. God said, I want you to honor the bodies of everybody else. You can't take someone else's life. Their life is sacred to me. Exodus 20, verse 14, thou shalt not commit adultery. God said, you honor everyone else's marriage. Don't commit adultery. Now, in the world today, we break that law all the time. Look at society, read your paper, read the stats. But it's still God's law. See, if we make our own laws, we can pass laws in Canada that make that not a big deal. But that's God's law. Exodus 20, verse 15, thou shalt not steal. Honor their possessions. You can't just go take whatever you want from anybody whenever you want because you honor them. Exodus 20, verse 16, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. God's saying, honor their reputation. You can't just say whatever you want about anybody whenever you want if you're a child of God. You're acting like a little hellion when you say horrible, twisted, unsubstantiated stuff about people. People of God don't act like that. People of God don't talk like that. It's in our commitments to God. Whatsoever things are good. I've got a huge response. People of God don't act like that. But it comes down here. The last commandment. Everyone say the last commandment. The last commandment is the invisible commandment. The last commandment is the unenforceable commandment. All the rest of these commandments in ancient Israel, you could basically go down the list and you could check them off and you could see if somebody had done it. It's very obvious if someone committed adultery, very obvious if someone stole, very obvious if someone didn't keep the Sabbath. You could go down the checklist and you could make sure that they did all that stuff. The last commandment is the unenforceable commandment. It's the invisible commandment. Because there's no way to tell if you're keeping this commandment or not. Only God knows. Only God. Here's the last commandment, Exodus 20, verse 17. Thou shalt not covet. Everyone say covet. Thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. To covet means to desire something so strongly that you'll circumvent the commandments of God to go get it. Nobody can tell if you're coveting. Nobody can tell here this morning. If you came to church and you've done all the motions, Pentecostal, calisthenics, nobody can tell if you've gone through all the motions and really in your heart, you're desiring something that God said you're not supposed to have. Coveting is the last commandment. It's the last commitment we make to God. God, if you say, I shouldn't have that, no matter how much my flesh cries out for it, and no matter how much everybody else says I'm entitled to it, if you say I can't have that, I'm walking away from it. My flesh may be reaching for it. My friends may be saying you're suicidal and insane, but I'm still going to walk if your word says no. And if your word says to do this, I may not understand it. I may have a bunch of so-called Christian friends that say, that's not necessary in 2008. But if your word says do it, my flesh may be saying, I don't want to. My flesh may be saying, I don't understand why. But I'm going to do it if your word says, because the bottom line is, God, you know my heart. And so I'm not going to covet things that aren't your will for me. Coveting leads to breaking every other commandment. Coveting leads to adultery. Coveting leads to stealing. Coveting leads to not putting God first. Coveting leads to not trusting God with your possessions and your money and your income and your time. Coveting leads to everything else because you want something outside the plan of God for you. And Pastor, we've spent a couple of wonderful days with all the guys at the campground in BC, and we had some powerful services. And Pastor, just my desire this morning is just to just haul back and scream and preach. But really, the Lord is telling us something here this morning. And I want to make sure that you get it. Because folks, even in the Old Testament, this is what's scary to me. We look at the Old Testament down our nose from the New Testament perspective and think, those people, you know, they really didn't have very much. They had a physical covenant with God, and we're the church, and we're spiritual, and we're God's spiritual people. All true. But even in the Old Testament, commandment number 10, you can't get away from commandment number 10. All the rest, you could keep on the surface. You could keep the Sabbath in your actions, but not really keep it in your heart. You could not commit adultery physically, but want to mentally in the Old Testament. Nobody would know the difference. You could maybe not take someone's possessions, but you could kind of arrange it so that they lost it through some other means. You could really break the commandment about stealing in a dozen different ways. But you couldn't get away from commandment number 10. Because when you get all done, commandment number 10 says, don't covet. Don't desire something outside the will of God for you. That's the message this morning. Can I be honest with you? By the overwhelming response this morning, I know we're right on target. You are not accountable to God, Pentecostals, Capital Community Church. Listen to Pastor. You're not accountable to God just for what you do or don't do. You are accountable to God for what you think. You are not just accountable for God for what's out here and what's out there. You're accountable to God for what's in here and what's in here. And that was Old Testament. This is New Testament. The greatest news I could possibly give you at the end of this service is that in the Old Testament, because that was a shadow of things to come, it was a type of what would be so much greater later on, that God gave them these commandments and these commitments. And it was probably possible, through gritting your teeth and just trying with the best of your ability, it was probably possible for most of your life to really live most of that, even maybe commandment number 10, just by strength of will. And there probably were good godly people, good righteous people in the Old Testament that did very, very good, but even they weren't perfect. But the best news I could possibly give you is that we're not in the Old Testament anymore. And in the New Testament, God said, all the same laws and even more. Because in the New Testament, it's not don't commit adultery, it's don't even lust after someone. But God said, I am going to not only be with you now, I'm going to heaven so I can send you back the Comforter. Who is me? It's my Spirit. The Comforter I'll send in my name. I will not leave you comfortless. I will come to you. God said, I will put my Spirit in your heart so that you can keep my commandments. God says to us, would you lay down the idea forever that I am trying to make you good? Because all kinds of people that you live in subdivisions with and that you go to work with and that you go to school with and that are in your family and people sitting here this morning, all kinds of people think that basically, by and large, they're good. God said, I am not trying to make you good. I'm trying to set you free. Totally different. People can say, he's a good person. And what they mean is, you basically keep your act together. You basically play by the rules. You basically, you know, kind of have your stuff all together. And nobody knows what demons you're fighting inside. You're good. You know what? I don't want to be good. I want to be free. I want to be able to lay my head on the pillow at night and know that there's nothing between me and God that will keep me out of God's heaven. And you know what? More than that, I just want to be free for living here in life. Because when you're free, the devil has no hold, no claim, no foothold in your life, no foothold in your mind, no foothold in your emotions, no foothold in your future, because you're free. Would you stand with me right now? And as you do, I'm going to ask if you'd bow your head. And Pastor wants to pray with you. Because the Spirit of the Lord is in this room right now. Can I get you to close your eyes, bow your head? The Lord spoke to us this morning by the gifts of the Spirit. And said, you get your relationship with me right. And then your relationship with others will be right. Some of you, the reason your relationship with others is not right is because you don't have your relationship with God right. Oh, it looks good on the outside. Everybody thinks you're good, but you're not free. God's here in this place this morning because He wants to set somebody free. Now, if you are a child of God and you know how to pray at all, Pastor needs you to just kind of push the pedal to the metal right now and just push yourself in prayer. Would you lift up your voice because somebody needs to hear this great church pray? Would you lift up your voice because somebody needs to feel the liberty that's created when God's people reach out to Him? Could you lift up your voice right now? So